I am not an expert. I've never published a book or taught a class, but I love quilting, and I love talking about quilting. I make a lot of mistakes, but I like to think that sometimes I learn from them and get just a little bit better. If hearing about someone else's goofs and mess-ups makes you feel better about yours, then I've done my job. So join me now as we talk about quilting for the rest of us. Hey, I'm Sandy, and I'm a quilter, and welcome to episode 220, in which I use ChatGPT to do math, and I'm recording this on April 21st, 2024. Welcome. Thank you for all of those who have been listening and commenting, and I'll get to the comments at the end of this episode. But to start with a little bit of quilty update, because I got some. So as you might recall, I had at the last episode was working on the baby quilt and had decided I really needed to put the baby's name across the top using lettering from my AccuQuilt die cuts, and I got that done yesterday, and it looks so cute. What I did, so the AccuQuilt alphabet set that I have, I think there are two different alphabet sets. I have the one that's a little bit more funky. They have one that's more classical, kind of Times New Roman looking, but the one I've got is more appropriate for baby stuff. And each letter comes to about 4.5 inches-ish. So if you want to pre-cut your fabric to get the letter, you need at least 4.5-inch square. And so that makes it perfect for a fine charm pack. So I had decided I wanted to do it in red, but I still wanted it to look scrappy. So I plowed through all of my charms. And I have a lot of 5-inch squares, just like my jelly rolls. Do you detect a theme? I have a bunch of charm packs that I've gotten over the years through, you know, the So Sampler box periodically sends charm packs. And then when I'm traveling, charm packs are a super easy way to support a local quilt shop and still be able to stick stuff in my suitcase. So I often will buy a couple of charm packs if I'm just stopping in to visit a new quilt shop on my travels, which doesn't happen that often anymore. And then, of course, when I'm cutting up scraps, that's one of my standard sizes I will cut scraps into. So I've got a bunch of 5-inch squares. So I dug through, and I found there's 7 letters total. So I found 7 different red 5-inch squares that are all the same type of red. So they all look kind of like they're from the same collection, but they're not. They're from a bunch of different collections, but they're all same quality of red, and then they just have different prints on them. And so I used each one for a different letter and pulled out my Pellen, what is it? I think it's 405, 805 Wonder Under, anyway. And I was a little concerned, again, as I said at the last episode, because I've had that stuff for a stinking long time sitting in my drawer, and I'm never quite sure whether Fusible has a shelf life. I think it must. You would think eventually it would stop working as well. So I was a little concerned when I started using this that it just wasn't going to do what it needed to do. But fortunately, it did seem to work fine. I only had a couple that when I peeled the paper backing off, you know, I kind of got that strange spider webby of the Fusible not wanting to let go of the paper. But that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with age. That could just be the way I pressed it, the way I was peeling the paper off or whatever. But it worked. And so the whole process, well, finding the scraps took me a while because I remarkably don't have that much red, apparently, in 5-inch squares. And then the only other thing that took a while was laying it out to make sure that the letters all looked balanced and everything, you know. I wasn't trying to go for exactitude because I knew I wouldn't get it. So I sort of measured things out, and then I just kind of eyeballed it from there. And I know that by the time I got everything fused, I wasn't anywhere close to where I thought I wanted them to be anyway. But I think it looks okay. So the only thing, I now need to stitch them down because I decided just doing the quilt, I'm just going to do probably a meander or a floral sort of overall thing that I can do very well. I've done it on a bunch of quilts. And it's not going to catch every single edge of those things. And over time, they would start lifting up. So I will somehow stitch them down. Kind of went through a bunch of different thoughts in my head about colors and how I was going to stitch them down and so forth. But I think what I'm going to end up doing is using a matching red so it's invisible and just do a very, very tiny blanket stitch. Not tiny lengthwise, but tiny widthwise, so that it does just catch it and hold it down, but it doesn't necessarily show up when you look at it. I think anything else would be too busy with the quilting over the top of it, I think. So, haven't gotten to that yet. I will at some point. But here was, I sort of did the squirrel thing this weekend. So after I got the fusible done, the letters on, I got that done Saturday morning, I think it was. And so then I decided I really needed to spend a few minutes just sort of cleaning up my sewing area. And that led to doing a light sort of my scraps, basically dividing them into strips versus large chunks versus crumbs. And in the process of that, I once again started feeling kind of overwhelmed with my stash of pre-cuts, all of my strips, my charms, my layer cakes. And then I've got a few other random things like honey buns and jelly bars that, again, I've gotten through the sew sampler. And I just started feeling like, oh my God, I got to start using some of this stuff. So as I was cleaning out and kind of reorganizing stuff and putting stuff away, I ran across some pineapple block foundation paper, a pad from, I think it's from So Sweetness. No, it's So Emma. I'm sorry, So Sweetness is the purses. It's So Emma pad of foundation paper in pineapple square blocks. And again, it was something I got through, I don't know, So Sampler or something, although it's too big for a So Sampler. Maybe I actually bought these at some point. I don't know. I've had them for a while. They come to a 12-inch square finished, and there's 42 of them in this pack. So it will make roughly twin size, I think, roughly somewhere between throw and a twin. So I pulled it out, and I just, it said on the top cover, perfect for charm packs and layer cakes. And I thought, yes. And I grabbed my layer cakes, and I don't have as many layer cakes, or, you know, I cut some 10-inch squares along the way. I don't have as many of those as I do the other types of things, but I have enough. And so I just pulled them out. I found some that were sort of in the same kind of tonal value of color, and sort of looked like they would sit happily together next to each other, but not matchy-matchy. And I just started cutting. I just started hacking away at them, putting them in baggies for the appropriate, labeled for the appropriate pieces that they would be used on this pineapple square, pineapple foundation paper. And basically I decided I'm just going to go ahead and prep all of this and put it in a project bin and have it all together ready to grab and go for like a retreat project or a sew day project, or if there's a day when I don't really feel like doing much else, but I, you know, a little bit of foundation paper piecing wouldn't be too much for me to handle. I've done foundation paper piecing before. Not my favorite thing to do because I hate pulling out all that paper, but I don't mind the process and I do like the accuracy. So, you know, I'll give it a try. I thought, well, it's at least a fun thing to sort of do here and there over time. I do still have some cutting to get that fully prepped, mostly to do with the center square. That's where the charm packs can be used. But I'm trying to decide if I just want to use a tone-on-tone white or at least some sort of consistent square throughout. So that with everything else being scrappy, that's sort of the secondary design or whatever that shows up. I haven't quite thought that through. As you can tell, I didn't really think anything through. I just pulled out a bunch of layer cakes, figured out kind of what looked like they went together, and just started slashing them up. I did not use my AccuQuilt for cutting these because even though the directions said to cut, everything was a 2.5 inch width, but then different lengths, I could have used my 2.5 inch die, but I would have lost a little bit. You can get pretty dang close with that 2.5 inch die, but I would have lost just enough on either side of the strip dies that I wouldn't have been able to get quite as many 2.5 inch strips out of the layer cake. So I decided to just use, the first couple of sets, and I was cutting like 4 to 6 at a time. And the first couple sets, I was just using a ruler and I have one of those big rotary cutters. Can't remember the size of it. The standard ones are something like 36, I think. This one's the really big rolly one that you use if you are doing thicker fabrics or if you're cutting layers of fabrics. And I don't use it that often, so I go through one blade every 5 years or so. I really don't have to change the blades all that often on that thing. But anyway, I did pull it out for this. And I ended up more pulling out my Creative Grid Stripology ruler. I don't know if it's actually called the Stripology ruler. That might be somebody else's brand strip ruler. But it's the one that's got the slots, so you just plop it down on top of the fabric, line it up so it's straight, and then you just whip your rotary cutter through the slots. I really do love that ruler. I used to have, the original one I had was June Taylor, I think, and I might have even inherited that one from my mother, but I never trusted that it was fully accurate. I felt like I would cut strips and then turn them and cut squares, and they weren't coming out square. And I kept, you know, for a long time, I kept thinking it was me. And then I finally, after years, I stopped using it for a while. And then I discovered that Creative Grids had made one, and so I bought theirs. And what I think the difference is that Creative Grids has those sticky dots on it that just hold everything in place while you're cutting. And I'm much more confident with it. I do a much better job. I don't know that it's really a problem with the June Taylor one. You know, I know other people who have used it and love it. It was probably user error, but the Creative Grids one works much better for me. So anyway, that was the one I was using, cutting all of these pieces. And so that made it go pretty quick. I don't know. It's at least nice knowing I can just, if I don't feel like sewing or if I don't feel like working on any of the projects I have at any given time, I'm going to start cutting pieces. And I've discovered that cutting fabric is actually very meditative for me. I think I enjoy cutting even more than I enjoy like chain piecing when it comes to fairly mindless stuff. Now, obviously, you've got to pay attention at some level while you're cutting, but when you're doing a bunch of stuff like that, it's easy to just kind of get into that rhythm. And I don't know if it's ASMR or something, but I love the sound of that rotary cutter going through that fabric. It just, it feels good. So anyway, that was kind of a squirrel moment for me yesterday. But I am about halfway done cutting the pieces for that pineapple square foundation paper. Now, I do have the AccuQuilt die for the pineapple block because I really like the pineapple block. I've never made one. I really want to make one. So at some point, I can do a comparison on that as to the die versus the foundation piecing. I will likely prefer not to use foundation paper if I make them again in the future, just because I hate pulling that stuff off. There is also a Creative Grids ruler for the pineapple block. I don't own it. Surprisingly enough, I know it seems like I own every specialty ruler known to man, but I do not own the pineapple Creative Grids ruler. I'd be interested if any of you own it and have used it, what your thoughts are. I could easily see myself buying that at some point. Because again, it's easier, it's more forgiving just like I found with the Log Cabin Creative Grids ruler, it's more forgiving. You use bigger pieces, you lop them off to size. It's less stress, I think. So we'll see. That's a podcast episode for another day. So how does ChatGPT come into my quilting life? ChatGPT, for those of you who don't know that, I'm sorry, I live with two people in the tech world, or one at least that used to be in the tech world, so all of these things are common conversations in our house. ChatGPT is sort of the user version of AI, artificial intelligence, although one of the common conversations in our house is whether ChatGPT is actually AI or whether it's just a really good search tool. It kind of depends. There's a lot of stuff that's called AI that is not AI. It's not learning. But, you know, that's what everybody wants to sound cool now calls it AI. Anyway, ChatGPT, you can enter in a query and it will give you a result. What it does is it handles a much more complex queries and it gives you potentially more complex results. And the more you use it, the more it learns from you what types of information you use, and you feed it all sorts of documentation, so it's searching everything it has. Anyway, so to get back to what I was working on, the backing for the Storm at Sea. So when I was first collecting all my fat quarters of various batiks in the color way that I was doing this quilt in, I did pick up the backing fabric because I found a good batik backing fabric that fit the theme. It's sort of a tone-on-tone sandy color, sandy beach color, and it's got shells and waves and everything in it. It's fairly subtle, but you can see them. But it works with the theme. So I had, because when I originally started this quilt, I did have it designed in EQ, which design I eventually lost one of the times I switched computers. But I did originally have it, so I had bought 8 yards. Clearly that was what was calculated, the amount I was going to need for backing for this quilt. Well, now that the quilt is made and I have the actual measurements for it, I was looking at this 8 yards and trying to do the math to figure out how do I piece this together to not only have enough for the backing, but the 4-inch on either side overhang you need when you're going to have it machine quilted. And so I had done the math, I had drawn out the charts, and when it comes to this kind of thing, I'm visual, so I sketch out, you know, I draw the rectangle, here's the quilt, here's the width, here's the length, here's a piece of fabric I'm going to have, here's how many inches it is, and I actually sort of draw it in. Well, for some reason, I drew a blank. I got pretty far with it, and then my brain exploded. And essentially, it's two things. One, I have talked in this podcast before about math trauma. It's a real thing. I often can be 3/4 of the way through what other people might think is a fairly simple math problem, and my mind just stops. It just stops. And I've never been able to fix this. Usually I have to just walk away for a little while, come at it fresh, and I can do it. And it's really not it. For many years, I would actually get a knot in my stomach. I would get really anxious around it. Now the anxiety has relieved partly, by the way, because I'm on anxiety meds. So it's all part of this whole anxiety thing. My stomach no longer twists, but my brain just stops. It just turns off. And so, and the trauma part of it is I still put that back to a elementary school math teacher who used to humiliate you in front of the class if you didn't get it right. So that's that whole thing. So anyway, I kept almost getting to it. So I decided I'm going to ask one of my kids, because they're both really good at math and they don't have the same math trauma I have. And so frequently when I come to math questions in my quilting, I will tap on one of them and say, okay, help me think this through. 9 times out of 10, I actually had figured it out, but I didn't trust that I'd figured it out. In any case, so I talked to my son this morning, and I said, okay, you know, do you want to help me with this math slash geometry logic question thing? And he goes, oh, well, let me try ChatGPT, because he is working on his degree in IT right now. And so one of the things, of course, they have them doing is working with ChatGPT. And so he decided to use this as a test. And so I gave him, okay, I've got 8 yards of fabric. I'm counting the width of fabric as 40 inches. I need X number of inches for the backing. And, you know, how do I cut this to do the back? And so he plugged it all into ChatGPT. And sure enough, it came out with the answer in writing to begin with, because it treated it like any other math problem. And it said I had already figured out 2/3 of it. And then just by reading what it was saying and kind of working it in my mind, I did finally figure out the part that I had blanked on yesterday. And I would have on my own anyway, but it was kind of fun seeing whether ChatGPT could do it. Well, then I said to my son, you know, see if it'll give me a cutting diagram. Just see if it'll show me how I'm supposed to cut the fabric in order to make this work. I was just curious. And so he plugged that in, and ChatGPT is infamous at this point with being really bad at imaging. I know you can get, you know, the deep fake videos and the deep fake photos and all of that, but it's not good. You can always tell the difference if you look at it closely enough. Well, in this case, the cutting diagram was absolutely ridiculous. It looked like it had just drawn architecture plans for, you know, a 5-story building, and it had all these arrows going in all over the place and cutting these little tiny pieces and putting them all back together. So that was completely useless. However, it did make me think, you know, I think we're going to get there someday. I think, you know, 5 years, 10 years from now, I will be able to type into a computer, I need, you know, I have a fat quarter, and I need to get X number of squares and X number of rectangles and X number of, you know, whatever of these sizes, and it'll spit it back out to me as a cutting diagram. And I tell you, I would love that. That's always one of my biggest issues, is trying to figure out, again, the geometry and logic of getting all the pieces I need to get out of one piece of fabric if somebody hasn't drawn me the picture of it. So anyway, now I know what I have to do with the backing. I'm still avoiding it just because the volume of fabric, I hate it so much. I should really just get it done sometime this week so that I could drop the whole thing off at a long arm quilter and just not have to think about it for several months until I get it back. And then I have to deal with the binding, but that's a whole other thing. So I did end up, again, in my squirrel moments right now of sort of doing what feels good and not what I feel like I really should be doing. I have had a quilt hanging on the back of my sewing room door so that every time I open my door, it wobbles back and forth and it bumps into anything that's hanging on my design wall. And it's just been annoying. Well, it's been annoying me for about a year and a half now, hanging there. All it needed was the binding. And so I finally decided today, I am just going to get that stinking binding on that stupid quilt and get it off the door. So that's what I ended up spending my sewing time today with. Now, I had not anywhere saved any fabric that I know of to be the binding for this quilt. Maybe I'll run across something that's already been cut somewhere in my stash, but it didn't, you know, I gave a quick look around today just to see whether I didn't see anything. So, I decided, you know, I looked in my yardage stash, fabric stash, and I didn't have, I had a couple things in the color that I really wanted. I wanted a deep burgundy. I had a couple of things in there that I could have maybe gotten away with, but I kept saying to myself, I'm trying to get rid of strips. Go to your strip stash. Go to your strip stash. And so I dug into my scrap 2.5-inch strips, and I managed to find, I think I needed 6 or 7 strips by my calculations, 2.5-inch strips, to go all the way around this thing, and I managed to find just enough, but they're not all the same. So then I had to decide how scrappy do I want to go on this binding. The quilt itself is, if you go back in my blog, oh, several years, I had done a jelly roll sampler from the Pam and Nikki Lintott jelly roll sampler book. And I had worked on this sampler kind of on and off over a few different quilt retreats over a couple of different years. I'd finally gotten it done. I'd done the inner border and an outer border. I had the whole thing finished at a retreat. Oh, gosh. Might have been as long as 5 years ago. I myself will have to go back in my blog and see if I can time this quilt. And then I used it. I did the long arming myself. I rented time on the long arming, got that done maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years. And then it's just hung there ever since. So I finally, but because it was a jelly roll, it's scrappy, but it's all one collection of fabric. So it coordinates really well. So it you know, it's not quite as busy as what a lot of scrappies can be. Plus, the jelly roll I used is a very sort of shabby chic feel to it. Boy, that feels 80s when I say that, but it's very muted tones. It sort of has a Victorian garden feel to it in some ways. And so I didn't want a full-on scrappy border. I really wanted something that was going to read as one color all the way through, and I think I managed it. But I am going to do this one by hand. In other words, when I do my binding by hand, I sew it on the front of the quilt, flip it over, and then you hand sew the back. That's kind of the traditional half machine, half hand way of doing binding. Recently, I have been doing more bindings fully by machine, where you sew it on the back, flip it over to the front, and then you use a decorative stitch or something down the front to actually bind it down. But I've really been wanting to get back into my hand sewing at night watching TV, and I'm just not getting the energy up around doing any of my English paper piecing right now. So I thought this might be, you know, again, a way to get myself back into hand sewing in front of the TV. So I'm going to work on that tonight when I go down to watch TV. So it feels good having that thing off the back of my door. And when I get that binding done, that will actually give me a finish. And I haven't had a finish in a very long time. I have one other quilt that only needs binding, but I really need to get that baby quilt done and in the mail. So I will be working on the backing for the baby quilt and trying to get it all basted into the sandwich and everything this week. Now, that being said, I am out of town next weekend, and then the following weekend I have a work event that's going to totally wipe me out. It's Friday night and all day Saturday, and you know, come Sunday I'm going to be just wanting to totally veg, so I don't know how much sewing I'm actually going to be able to get done that weekend. But I will then have a day or two of comp time coming to me between those two events. So I may get some sewing done, but that does mean I will not have a podcast out this coming weekend. And it's a little iffy whether I'll get one out the following weekend. I hope so. Again, I don't want to fall out of the habit, so I'll try to get something. All right, so that's all the sewing. Well, no, actually, that's not all the sewing I did. So the other thing I did on Saturday, when I was cleaning up my sewing area and trying to deal with these scraps, I decided to try my hand at a little bit of crumb quilting. I don't know if this is going to be me, to be honest. I have for years just tossed out anything that people would say were crumbs. If they were slightly larger crumbs, I would give them to Charlotte in our quilt guild, those of you who know her as Scrapitude. And she uses much smaller scraps than I do. Pretty much anything other than a 2.5-inch square, now 1.5-inch strips to squares I will use. But anything, you know, I just don't do that much. I don't like to have to work that hard for my fabric is what it comes down to. I've done them a few times. I did a quilt backing once that was all just kind of crumbs, and that was fun. But it just, it takes longer than what I want to do when I get to that point in a quilt. But I thought, you know, I've been highly influenced by Karen Brown of Just Get It Done Quilts. I watch a lot of YouTube while I'm sewing, and hers is one of my favorite quilting channels. And she does a lot with crumbs and smaller pieces. And she has some great series on scrap quilting and you know, various projects you can do just sort of as time goes on. I know Bonnie Hunter is sort of the queen of scrap quilting in this quilting world. She's the scrap celebrity. I often find her stuff a little too intricate for me. And frankly, sometimes just too busy. I do like some of it, certainly, and I have her book, and I think she's got a lot of great inspiration. Karen Brown goes the opposite direction. She does a lot more improv stuff. She also does a lot of kind of more modern things. And so I probably land somewhere in between those two. So it's good for me to get inspiration from both. But one of the things that Karen Brown does is she uses adding machine tape as essentially a foundation. And she will sew crumbs together along this adding machine tape into strips. And then she'll trim them up to size, and then she'll have these strips that she'll use in blocks. And I'd seen that episode for the first time a long time ago. And then several weeks ago, I was looking for some sort of office supply in my administrator's office, and she's got the two big cabinets that have all of our office supply kind of stuff in there. And I saw this box down in the bottom of the cabinet, and, you know, out of curiosity, I just popped the top off, and I realized it was a whole box full of adding machine tape rolls, or rolls of adding machine tape, and the adding machine sitting next to it. Now, of course, we haven't used the adding machine the whole time I've been there. I doubt it was used probably within 5 years of me getting there. People just don't use adding machines anymore, for the most part, because it's all on your computer or now even on your phone. So with Karen Brown's voice in mind, I grabbed a roll of that adding machine tape, and I thought, oh, someday I'll just give this a shot. Well, Saturday, the first thing I did was I sat down and I just tried to sort of freestyle a block of crumbs, and I got to about 8 inches. I trimmed it up to about 8 inches, and that, no foundation paper or anything, I was just sewing pieces together, and, you know, it's okay. Again, it took me an hour, I think, to put that block together. And I thought, I'm not having enough fun with this to want to keep doing this enough times to have enough of these blocks to really put something together. Now, maybe I will. We'll see. But that, I didn't throw out that block. I set that block aside. And I thought, well, maybe I'll try the adding machine tape. Maybe that'll be a little more enjoyable because it's just a little faster. And because it's on foundation paper, it'll stay a little bit straighter. And so I whipped off, I think I cut it to like a 12-inch piece. She typically does hers to 18 inches, I think. But that's because her adding machine tapes are a little bit wider, and so she had done the math ahead of time about how many of these she'd have to sew together to get the block she wanted. I, of course, did not pre-plan. I didn't even measure the adding machine tape until today. So anyway, I did one strip. And it worked. It was kind of fun. And so then I trimmed it off. Well, I then decided maybe I should go back and watch her tutorial again today on it, and realized that I had trimmed it to the side of the paper rather than leaving a quarter inch on either side, which is what she does. And then just watching her and seeing as she progressed and then thinking, wait a minute, I am going to have to pull all this paper back off of these stinking things, you know, once I use them in a block. And again, I hate that. That's the part of foundation piecing I don't like doing. So why would I commit to doing that on these strips so that I have a gazillion of these things to cut through? So I'm now thinking, I don't care if I have all this adding machine tape I could use for free. I don't think I want to do this. Now, here's what I am thinking. As I was watching my YouTube videos today, I ended up watching the Gypsy Quilter channel. And Gypsy Quilter does a bunch of, you know, sewing notions and tools and all of that. Any of you who have been quilting for a while have heard the name Gypsy Quilter. And they actually sell tape that's washable, what's the word I'm looking? Wash away stabilizer. So it's the same, idea. It's strips. I don't know what width it is. I'd have to look at it. But you never have to pull it out. It just washes away. And so I thought, okay, yes, the adding machine tape is free. Yes, I could then feel good about, aren't I, you know, I'm recycling, I'm doing all this good stuff. Or I could buy the stuff I'd never have to pull out. And I think I know which way I'm probably going to go. I don't know. The box of adding machine tape, I should just donate to, like, the crafts. There's a Crafts Bits and Pieces across town. There's also something, it's called Crafting for Good or something like that. On my side of town, I more recently became aware, but they're both craft store supplies. And I'm sure if I brought a box of adding machine tape to either of them, somebody would say, oh, this is great. I love pulling out foundation paper with tweezers. That's how I get my jollies. And they would be more than happy to use it. So that's, I'm just kind of playing around now with stuff that I could do a little at a time and collect over time and eventually have enough to do something with. I don't know. We'll see. This might just be a whim that I'm on for a few weeks, and then I get over myself and I start throwing a bunch of stuff out or giving it away, more likely giving it away to people in my guild who do enjoy doing stuff like that. We'll see. Am I that kind of person or not? I actually don't really know. I have discovered in all of my scrap work that I have so few lights in strips or any of these pre-cut sizes. I have so few lights, particularly in 2.5-inch strips. And, I have a lot of mediums, and I have a lot of medium lights that are either light or dark, depending on what you put them next to. But I have very few sort of very true lights. And especially as I'm getting into doing all of these log cabins, for the look I like, I really want to have true lights. So I've ended up having to buy yardage just to turn them into light scraps, which is very bizarre to me, but that's what it is. So I ended up buying some low volume scraps from Etsy. They're all big enough to be stripped into either 2.5 or 1.5-inch strips. Haven't done it yet, but I do. I got those last week. And I bought a low volume pack of fat quarters from Fat Quarter Shop. And then today I went through and bought just half yards of a bunch of white tone-on-tones that Fat Quarter Shop had on sale. Again, just to strip them down when they get here so that I can pull from them for all of these projects. Now, while I was on the Fat Quarter Shop sale pages today, I ended up succumbing once again to buying new books, which I should not because I've got plenty. But here's what Fat Quarter Shop is so dang good at doing. So they keep putting those stinking triangles in a roll things in the sew sampler boxes. So I've now got a handful of them in various sizes, but I don't make, I haven't made anything that I could really figure out how was I going to use those. And of course, Fat Quarter Shop has a book by It's So Emma that is geared for using up various sizes of those triangles on a roll. And so it was on sale. So sure, I bit. And then they have also by It's So Emma, the Perfect Five Quilts book, which is all about 5-inch squares, which again, I have a boatload of charm packs and 5-inch squares. So I bought that one too, on sale. This is basically just mental laziness. That's all it is, people. I am owning it. I am owning it. If I can have a book tell me exactly which of those triangles on a roll strips I need and how many of them I need and how to use them with what colors, not what colors, but at least, you know, light, medium, dark kind of thing so I can choose my own colors. Yeah, do the math for me, people. Please. Remember that whole comment about math trauma. That is a recurring theme. I can do math. I mean, I've certainly designed my own quilts. I certainly have done a lot of cutting and figuring and all of that over the years. But when I'm tight on time or when I am just mentally fried, which is most of my life these days, at least for the next little whiles until I retire, I will be happy to let somebody give me instructions and let me just follow them. So I'll let you know how those books are and, you know, what I end up doing with these triangles on a roll. One thing I do have to stop doing is thinking in terms of large quilts. A lot of these things, I could be knocking out some of my stats just making placemats or tote bags or, well, don't even get me into bags. I have a fascination with bags, but I stink at making them. That's another thing I've decided, you know, in retirement, when I actually have a day that I could spend at my sewing machine or when I can just focus on something over a period of time, maybe I'll get better at making bags. We'll see. Hashtag retirement dreams. So anyway, these are things that I don't know. I just hate doing them. This is why I like EQ8, because it also does the math for me. Yay. All right, so that's really it on my quilty update. Wow, this podcast is going longer than I've been going lately. Look at me. I have stuff to talk about now. Media talk. I won't spend a long time on this because this episode has already gone a little bit longer. Let me just follow up last week's comments about Kristen Hannah's The Women. It did grow on me by the end. It's the middle part. It's still a little rough going for me, but it grew on me by the end. I did end up giving it 5 stars. I'm still not 100% sure that my 5 stars was because of the storytelling or if it was because it lifted up a really complex and important issue about how, one, not just soldiers were treated immediately after Vietnam, but specifically how women in the military were treated after Vietnam, that they just were not taken seriously. They didn't get the level of attention and treatment that male soldiers received. The rumors or the going, what's the word I'm looking for? Propaganda that there were no women in Vietnam, when actually she says in her afterword there were like 10,000 nurses and field staff, all sorts of women in Vietnam. And many of them suffered PTSD, but it was not recognized because they were women and they had not been on the front lines. So in that regard, I was really, really impressed by this book and how it dealt with those issues. Still had problems really loving the characters, but again, it was so well written in terms of time and place. You really, really got that. You really got the issue. You really got all of the politics kind of surrounding it. So the fact that I didn't fall in love with the characters was a little less important to me. So I did give it a 5 stars. Again, it was probably more of a 3.5 to 4 for me from a storytelling point of view, but it was 5 from the way it handled the issues that it addressed. Would love to hear your opinions. I did also finish the current Harry Grimm book I was on, which was, by the way, number 13. I couldn't remember last week which it was. It was Dark Hours. But I'm going to give myself, I'm not diving right into the next Harry Grimm. I instead switched back to fantasy, and so I am reading Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies by Heather Fawcett. That's my Kindle book, so in other words, the one I read at night. And it's set in Scandinavia, so it is still European mythology, but it got really good reviews, and it's described as a cozy fantasy with words like lighthearted and charming. So it sounded like some nice, gentle reading, particularly after reading a murder mystery along with a book about Vietnam. I kind of felt like I needed to take a back, pedal it back a little bit and go a little bit lighter this time. My print book, my handheld novel, again from the Book of the Month Club, is Dragon Fruit by, I'm probably not going to pronounce her name correctly, Makia Lussier. Dragon Fruit is described as dazzling romantic fantasy, also light, also charming. But what interested me, and the reason I used it as one of my Book of the Month picks, is that it's based on Pacific Island mythology. I am slightly more familiar with Pacific Island mythology, but still not deeply versed in it. I took an art history class in college once, building up some credits, and I did a paper on one of the tiki gods from the Pacific Islands. It was Ku, the god of war, just because I thought his wood carving was so dang cute. And in fact, I think I had a little version of it on my desk for a long time. I don't really remember anything about Ku, the god of war, or what I wrote about in the paper, but he was cute, so I wrote it. It's kind of funny saying that a god of war was cute. So, that's kind of what my reading is going to be right now. For a long time, I tried to read important books. I was an English lit major in college. So I read a fair amount of nonfiction, particularly social issue books, or I try to read the great literature, either current great American novels or stuff on important kinds of topics. But the reality is, in my current role for my vocation, I deal enough in social issues and heady nonfiction type topics. So, about a year ago, I decided to cut myself some slack, and my reading has taken a delightfully lighter turn. So I don't often challenge myself too much in my reading. So that's my media review, and I will keep you posted on what I think about Encyclopedia of Fairies and Dragon Fruit. I do want to give a shout out to some folks who have been commenting. Ellen and Colleen. Colleen is a prolific commenter. Thank you so much for all of your comments. Janet, Anna, Lauren, Linda, and Sandy. That's not me. That's another Sandy, but she does also spell her name with a Y. Where that conversation came in, and I'm going to go to it now while I'm talking to you all, is I did ask a question on my Facebook page about, I'm sorry, I'm trying to get to where they list just the comments. My question was, I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos of various log cabin tutorials for some inspiration as I continue in my strip busting endeavors. I find it interesting that some tubers call the log cabin, quote, easy for beginners, whereas others suggest it's for a, quote, confident beginner or even, quote, intermediate. I'm curious, what category do you think the log cabin block falls into and why? And I said this is good fodder for an upcoming episode. So actually, you know what? I'm not going to read these comments to you today because I do think that'll make a really good podcast episode. Is the log cabin a beginner quilt block or not? And why? In other words, where are the things that could make it trickier? Or the things that make it easier. And as I was reading the comments, I could sort of tell that yes, there are ways it can be a super easy quilt for beginners, but then there are other ways, particularly if you do it in the more traditional methods, that it is more challenging. So stay tuned. I think that will become an episode. Meanwhile, thank you to all of those folks who did comment. I do hope you will comment to me as well, because as I always say, I view this podcast not as a monologue, 45 minutes notwithstanding, but as a conversation. I love to have your comments. I love to be able to talk with you about them on the episodes and so forth. So again, thank you for all of those folks who did comment this time around. And we will hear more from them about that log cabin question. Maybe I'll make that my next episode because I won't have to have actually sewn in order to record that podcast. That's not a bad idea. Thank you for thinking of that, Sandy. So anyway, that is my episode for this week. And you know how you can get a hold of me because I keep saying, comment, please. I don't remember exactly where you can get a hold of me. I still have to look at my cheat sheet, which I'm having problems finding right now. You can email me. Okay, pull it together, Sandy. You can email me at sandyquilts@gmail.com, Sandy with a Y, Quilts with a Z. You can follow me on Pinterest or Instagram. I'm Sandy Quilts in both of those places. You can like the Quilting for the Rest of Us page on Facebook and, in fact, join in on our conversations there. You can comment on Podbean. I think I'm just Quilter there. I don't check Podbean as office, so although you can comment there, I would caution against it. You can always leave comments on my podcast and blog, my podcast show notes or my blog at www.quiltingfortherestofus.com, or you can join the Quilting for the Rest of Us Kiva team and do good all over the world. Oh, and you can find links to all of those things on my website at www.quiltingfortherestofus.com. See, this is why I usually script this out for myself, because otherwise I forget about it. And I think that's it. So until next time, go get your quilty on.
Quilting for the Rest of Us is dedicated to Shirley. Love you, Mom.